Okay, this hour we're going to take your phone calls with Jay Widener. We'll also ask him about Stanley Kubrick's 2012 and how that fits into all this. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jay, what does a Stanley Kubrick's 2012 have to do with this? How does that fit into the equation?
Well, Kubrick, he knows what's going on. He was rubbing shoulders with Hermann Oberth, who was one of the people who started, or one of the first German scientists at NASA. Arthur C. Clarke, I believe, knew a lot about this. I don't know how. Maybe he was a member of the Freemasonic societies. But he wanted to tell us what was really going on in A Space Odyssey, and he did tell us. And he was very concerned about the truth, and I believe he knew the truth. I not only believe that he understood what was really going on as far as what I've just told you, but he tried to tell us about the secret society in his last film, Eyes Wide Shut. Interestingly enough, one of the films that Kubrick was working on in the early 90s, but he abandoned it, was a film called The Aryan Papers, which was a film about a poor Jewish historian who was being forced, from what I've heard, being forced to write the history of the Aryan race while being serving time in a concentration camp. And so all this stuff, you know, he knows he's very high up in these circles, and he was obsessed with Nazi memorabilia. His entire house was filled with all sorts of papers from the Nazis and symbols of the Black Sun and all the rest. As one other thing I want to emphasize before, you know, so I don't make anyone misunderstand me, I don't think that the Aryans are good guys. I'm actually rather angry at them. I think that if this is all true, that they've really left us adrift and they've destroyed our planet. And I hope someone takes a pop shot at them as they're leaving. I hope Obama does. So I don't want anyone to ever think that I'm like promoting this as a good thing. I think that if this is true, it's a bad thing. And I say good riddance to them. So I just want to say that, nor do I want anyone to think that white people are some exalted race or even a race that should be killed or be angry at because they helped cause this. All of this is irrelevant to the major story, and I ask people to please read your history, read up on some other things, and find out the truth. I just don't want a backlash against anyone because of what I'm reporting here. I just want the truth to get out. As for Kubrick, his entire work, his entire 13 films, are really one long film. And he is telling us a story about the secret history of the human race. And he's doing it in a way that combines icons of pop culture, film, and cinema, and puts it together so that once you start going into his films, you begin cracking the whole scheme. So 2001 is about a group of about a intervention into human affairs by a higher intelligence or a group of off-planet beings who teach us about technology. A Clockwork Orange is about how the government can mind control you to, you know, do whatever it is that they want. Barry Lyndon is about the bloodlines, the Aryan bloodlines, and how no matter how much you want to be in those bloodlines, unless you were born into them, you can never be part of them. And so Barry Lyndon is eventually, even though he tries to rise up into their culture, he's eventually rejected by them. The Shining is, of course, in my view, the secret story of Stanley and how he helped fake the moon landings. Eyes Wide Shut, which we have yet to ever see his original edit because it was edited by Warner Brothers after he died. And even though they claim that the new version is the version that he wanted, I have seen clips of the original version, and they're not in the new version. So again, they don't really call it the director's cut, which that means they're probably telling us the truth. It is not the director's cut. And the inner story of Eyes Wide Shut is about these elitists and how they have certain magical practices and occult rituals, and Tom Cruise is not allowed in. And he accidentally gets in, and his life is threatened. And even they...
What was the password, by the way, Jay? You remember it?
I do. Fidelio.
You got it.
Well, I've only seen the film about 300 times. But there's incredible continuity errors in Eyes Wide Shut, which Stanley would never have done. And so I think they cut certain scenes out, which may have told too much. And I believe that Arthur C. Clarke is part of this, and he's up there in the top echelon of these things. I find it an astonishing coincidence that in the book, 2001: A Space Odyssey, they go to the moon of Saturn, where they find the monolith, which is Iapetus, which is Japhet, who is one of the sons of Sargon, who is Sauron in Lord of the Rings. And I think that they knew, and when Hoagland uncovered his work on Iapetus and proved that it's an awfully peculiar planet or moon of Saturn, I think that he may have been on to their technologies and things. And Saturn also plays a part in this. In 2001, the astronauts were originally going to Saturn, but Kubrick at least publicly declared that he couldn't make it Saturn because he couldn't make the rings believable enough. Now, Kubrick could do anything. I think that the powers that be came in and said, no, you're getting a little too close, because Saturn is a strange planet and maybe some kind of hyperdimensional construct with its hexagonal cloud patterns at the North Pole and some of the other strange things that have been found on the moons of Saturn. It's a strange thing. And for people who don't understand a lot of this, they really need to read the work of Tom Van Flandren, the astronomer who came up with the whole exploding planet theory. The asteroid belt is an exploded planet. And according to, you know, the work that Hoagland's been doing and a few others, it could have been an occupied planet with oceans and everything. And this might even explain how, like, fishes fall from the sky. It happened in Australia about a month ago. And this is the oceans of Tiamat freezing after it got exploded, and the animals freezing inside these giant snowballs, which eventually some hit the earth, and the bodies of the fish fall down onto the planet. These are, you know, comets may actually be the oceans of this planet, frozen and drifting in wild orbits through the solar system. We know the solar system got really whacked a few million years ago, and everything is thrown off its base here. And all of this is, you know, a lot of people are pursuing this and trying to figure out the story. I'm just bringing in the Piranha text, and I'm also bringing in the films of Stanley Kubrick to show that he's trying to tell us this story also, and he's doing it in a way that doesn't offend the financial people who he needs to finance his multi-million dollar films. So the films of Kubrick, I could do a whole show on them, and maybe someday we will. I could take each film and show you and deconstruct it and show you that Stanley is telling us a larger story under the veneer of just a regular film. And quite amazing story it is, I must say.
He was a genius. Let's go to the phones now, Jay. We'll go to Lexington, Kentucky. First-time caller is Bobby. Good morning, Bobby.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. All is well. Thanks.
You were speaking about the real earlier. I'm really fascinated with the real, and I've read up on it. Could you just talk more about the Thule Society? And I know we have an Air Force base in Greenland. It's an Air Space Command called the Thule Air Force Base. And that is roughly in the area where the ancient society of Thule, it's almost like an Atlantean type Just wondering if I know there were some long-haired women.
Yep.
It was that Hitler and all those guys really went through for a lot of information. And seems like I remember reading that the long-haired women really got aggravated with Hitler because he was so war-bent on, you know, destruction and killing people. And what they were really trying to do is just trying to get back to, I believe you think it was Mars. I think it was written as Sirius.
Well,
or one of the stars in a constellation.
Yeah, I mean, if you take the Purana texts all the way back, they say that originally, I mean, a long time ago, that we, I don't know if this is true, I'm just telling you what they say, and by the way, the Freemasons believe the same thing, that we came from Sirius a long, long time ago, and either altered the planets here and made them livable, or maybe found them already livable, and genetically created humans, and humans are part Sirians and part animals from here on Earth, if you believe what they say. Yeah, and you're right, there was, I forget her name now, a very beautiful woman, a German woman who channeled the Thule knowledge. And yeah, the Aryans prefer the colder lands of the north. There's a lot of research from Finland and Sweden and the Nordic myths. And of course, Tolkien got most of his stuff from the Finnish myths, which are also about these tall, blonde-headed people who share the planet with us, but don't really want to live with us too much. And that's where he got most of his stuff. So yeah, this is all part of the same interworkings of this mythology. And you can back engineer it. You can take these German secret societies and back engineer them, and you start finding out that it's just common knowledge that they think that they came from Mars and that originally they came here from Sirius long before they went to Mars or conquered any place else in the solar system. But we have to come to grips with this fact that there is stuff all over the solar system which a very highly advanced race built. And when it was built and who built it, I can't answer. I can only tell you what I've gotten from reading these ancient texts, and they tell me that we are a race that has been around for millions of years.
Next up, we go to Anthony, Florida Keys, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Anthony.
Hi. Love your show, George, and thanks for all your guests that enlighten the world so much.
Absolutely.
Your guest spoke about alchemy, and I was wondering if the Aryans were possibly setting up all these locations in specific geometry, you know, special geometrical shapes to use alchemy, I mean, use our world, you know, as alchemy.
Yes, that's what they're doing. They know about higher dimensional physics, and they're creating these monuments for certain effects, so that they can manipulate matter, and they're experts at manipulating matter, but any of us can do it. I want to emphasize, these are not special beings or anything. They're not anything different than anyone else on Earth. They just happen to have preserved their knowledge through the cataclysm that periodically comes. And by the way, that is considered in the Puranas to be illegal. They're not supposed to be able to escape and leave and come back. It's part of the Earth, the way that the Earth works is that periodically it's wiped clean and then started up again. And this is like a necessary thing, apparently, for proper advancement of consciousness here on Earth. And the Aryans broke the rules, and they keep bringing back the same genetic strains over and over again. And this is why, like, corn is a hybrid. It was developed by some advanced beings at some point, and I think pretty much it was developed at some Atlantean time period thousands of years ago, preserved by these people, and then brought back to Earth and started up again. And if you read, like, Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock, you can see that all over the Earth there's these myths of these people with pale skin coming and teaching people how to read and write and civilization and farming and all of that. And again, it plays right into this whole mythology that is being constructed. And I'm not, again, I want to emphasize, I think that the hunter-gatherer state is a highly, is an advanced state. I know it doesn't look like it if you look at them, but if you examine hunter-gatherer societies the way someone like James Cameron has, you can see that they are very advanced societies in a spiritual sense, not in a material sense.
Okay, next up we go to Wayne in Merced, California. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, hi. I have had a life experience that might shed some light on this 2012 deal.
Mm-hmm.
About in the very early 70s, I had a 6 or 8 month good friendship with this guy, who near the end of the relationship there, we were having this very involved philosophical conversation relative to, you know, I told him basically a whole lot of the theories of life that I had come up with at that time. And when he said, you know, Wayne, you've almost got it right. And so I'm going to tell you something that I wouldn't tell, you know, hardly anyone. And that is that I'm a alien. So
did you believe him, Wayne?
Say again?
Did you believe him?
I didn't know whether to believe him or not. But shortly after that, now, this all happened in Phoenix. Shortly after that, I took him to the bus station because he was going to, he had to go up to Fresno. And I just let him off and didn't think that much of it, except that he says, you know, I will see you again in about 40 years. And you will recognize me immediately because I will not have changed. So, you know, I thought, well, whatever. 4 or 5 years later, I watched Von Daniken, the movie Chariots of Fire, or the Gods or something.
Chariots of the Gods.
Okay. And at the, you know, and the part of the movie was that the something about the Mayan culture and something was going to happen. It was, as I recall, it said 2011.
Yeah, it depends on how you do the count. Some people count of course we have AD and BC. Some people count the year between BC and AD as 0 year, and some people don't. And now we do count that year, and so now the date is 2012 if you're doing a day count. So that's where that discrepancy comes from.
Jay, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, it's the John Searle story, how he believes his magnetic generator, the Searle Effect Generator, can save our planet from economic disaster. That'll be our next Coast to Coast show. But when we come back with Jay Widener, let's take final calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Jay, tell me about your reaction to that famous Norway spiral and how that fits into things.
Well, I think that, you know, Obama was receiving the Nobel Peace Prize
right
at the same night that Putin decided to launch a missile. And, of course, we all wonder why Obama was getting the Peace Prize, since he had hardly been in office.
He was wondering why he was getting
it. Exactly. And I think that I think Putin was trying to intimidate Obama by launching the missile while he was there. And I think that the guys that are leaving did the spiral took the missile out of the sky while it was being launched and froze it in the air, and then and we, of course, had this huge hyperdimensional weapon that was being exhibited for all to see to tell both the United States and Russia who is really in charge here and to not mess with them. You see, the thing that these guys, I mean, assuming all this is true, and, you know, I can't say that it's true. I can only tell you what they believe it's true. The one thing that these guys are worried about is we're going to back engineer their stuff and then go take off after them because we're angry with them, which we probably should be. And they don't want that. So they want us to be intimidated, and it was an act of pure intimidation, just pure and simple, both to Putin and to Obama. And Obama's peace prize may have been, you get the peace prize as long as you don't take any pot shots at us. But the thing is that if you look up at the night sky with these goggles, there is some kind of, like, war going on.
Something's going on up there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to make of it. I've seen these things, like, shooting at each other. And you can't see this with the naked eye. You got to spend a lot of money and get these goggles to see this, but it's well worth the show. And I don't know how long they're going with this. My DOD sources tell me that the night vision goggles are going to be outlawed soon. So if you can get them now and enjoy the spectacle, because I think pretty soon they're probably going to get confiscated. You know, terrorists could use them or something. Who knows?
Let's go to Vallejo, California. Paul, you're up with us. Go ahead, Paul.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Anyway, I called you once before, and I'll talk about that in a second, I hope. Jay, you made a comment about the piranhas. That kind of rang a little, hit a little biblical bone with me. You talked about the gold, silver, bronze, and iron age, and automatically my mind kind of went to Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Mm-hmm. And where you have the image of the head of gold, silver, bronze, iron. The only thing missing was the feet of clay and iron mixed together, and the stone that was not cut by human hands that came out smashed, which I would put us in a fifth age,
right,
because of that, because of Christ's coming.
Well, there actually is a kind of a fifth age, which the Hindus call the Diamond Age, or it's the intervening years between where we transmute from the Iron Age back into the Golden Age. And I believe that's what's going on with Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar, is he, remember, all of the mythologies have a single origin place, and they each interpret it differently. And I think that Daniel is doing a fairly accurate interpretation of the ages. And the, of course, the clay is a reddish clay mixed with iron, and it sounds a lot like Mars to me. And again, you start looking at these texts, and you start looking at the ancient, at the Puranas use the word Maru for, and it means desert land, or and sometimes it means Eden. So I don't know exactly what to make of this, and I haven't had a whole lot of time to put all of the mythologies together because this stuff is racing at me so fast I can barely put it all together. But I believe that Daniel is talking about these four ages, and that when the age of iron comes, the end will come, and the Redeemer will, you know, come and hopefully save us.
Well, let's go to Sherry in Phoenix, Arizona. You can save us. Sherry, go ahead.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. Great topic. This is the first time that I have had the opportunity to hear you, Jay, but are you familiar with a gentleman named Brian DeFloris by chance?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I had the opportunity to meet him. George, you might know Dr. Lynn Kitai. She did the Phoenix Lights movie.
Sure,
okay,
yeah.
Well, she had, okay, well, I had the opportunity to see her viewing here in Phoenix in mid-March, and she met a gentleman named Brian DeFloris about a year prior, I believe it was last year, and he contacted her, and he claims to be from the Ashtar Command, the Airborne Division. And you might want to check out his website. It is beyond amazing. He talks about everything that you're going into with all of the ancient texts, but ties it together that our planet is actually transitioning, and there are several intergalactic races, I guess, that are here and coming and going, but we are going to be transitioning into, seventh, what were you talking about, this golden age, back into the golden age. But he talks about a lot of this ancient text.
Yeah, he talks about a new paradigm too, doesn't he?
Well, you know, that is true, because once our masters, and they're not our masters, I use that euphemistically, uh-huh. Once these guys are gone, we're free now to uh-huh. become whatever we want. And I personally, you know, I hope nothing happens in 2012, and we can create a society that's more just than the one that's been happening for 6,000 years. So, yeah, I think that's exactly right. We're, you know, the people in the Andes, the Inca, say that there's these shamans that go into the caves and can transmute themselves into light. And they say, they've told me that this is the man of the future, or the human of the future, the homo luminous, I call him. And I think that's actually may be true. And I think we've been kept from our true destiny by the slave masters, who are thankfully gone now, and we can pursue our own destiny now and not have to work for them. So I think there's a lot of truth in this whole idea of a transformation that's about to happen. I really do. The shackles have been taken off of us, and we're free to pursue our own destiny, our own goals now.
Jay, before we take final calls, tell us a little bit about Infinity. Where can you get the DVD?
Well, it's on Amazon, and you can get it at sacredmysteries.com, our site. You can also read all my articles up at jaywidener.com, jaywiedner.com. I have my articles up about Kubrick and about the moon landings and Aryans and all sorts of fun topics that Coast to Coast listeners would love.
San Diego we go. Joey's a first-time caller. Welcome to Coast, Joey.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Norrie and Mr.
Sure.
Widner.
Thank you.
I would just like to say that the Puranas is part of the Vedic, huge amount of Vedic text.
That's for sure.
And there's different sections. And I was a celibate monk for 10 years and visited India. It's unbelievable. And if anybody has seen the show India by the British journalist, it was amazing. But what you're talking about is completely true. If you do all the studies and you study, there's a string that goes through all the world's religious, true religious, not just something that was made up by some person. There's a string that runs through every single religion, and it tells us that we're the soul in the body, and we're reincarnated. And this age we're in right now is called Kali Yuga.
Yep.
And Yuga is the length of time, like winter, spring, summer, fall. Each Yuga has characteristics.
That's right.
And the characteristics of this age is immoralism. That's why the great saints, millions of years ago, the Vedic text was sung. That's why Bhagavad Gita is called the Song of God. And so the Vedic text holds the truth. And also, I do believe there are other life forms in other parts of the creation.
I'm with you. I think that the Vedic texts are incredibly important and are dismissed by Westerners way, way too much. And we need to go back and look at them, because I'm telling you, there is a lot of truth back there. And we'll understand our own religions better by understanding it. And we'll understand especially Christianity, which seems very closely related to the Vedic understandings of reincarnation and the soul and the body and resurrection and all that.
2012 rolls around. Are we in trouble?
I hope not. I think we could be. I hope not. I hope we're going to get through this and get to the other side and create an equitable world where we can live in peace finally and repair our planet and get back to the things that are important, like loving each other.
Let's go to Fort Smith, Arkansas. Hello, Mary. Thanks for holding.
Hi. Thanks. I'm a longtime listener and a longtime metaphysician, and this is a very interesting topic for me. I just wanted to put in that I've received a lot of information, reading, receiving from spirit guides and channels and seers and all of that, and spiritual studies. And one thing is very clear to me. It was not just one group of beings that were the bad guys or the good ones, but that originally when we were star-seeded, it was the Pleiadians, and our DNA was 80% Pleiadians. And then over time, the Sirians, the Orions, and the Dracos primarily were the ones that they're the ones like in the Greek myths and all of that, and Egypt, and they're the ones that kind of over time changed our DNA so that we ended up being the opposite. We're only 10% Pleiadian at this point, most people. And so it's kind of like, I'm really glad that some of them are going or whatever, but we still have this DNA, and so our souls have to really shine through with love again, if you see what I mean, because they left us also with this DNA that's difficult.
Well, I'm with you. I only read books and ancient texts, so I can't really. I don't channel, and so I don't know if any of that's true. I can only report what I found in the ancient texts, and they don't really say that. But then again, they don't say it either. It's not like it could still be part of this milieu that I'm talking about. But I have to stick with the facts and as they are, and I can't get too fantastic because what I'm saying is fantastic enough. So yeah, we definitely have, DNA, and we've been genetically manipulated. I'm pretty sure of that. I doubt very much whether Darwinism has much efficacy in the real way that reality works, and not to say that there isn't evolution and all that. I'm just saying that there's other forces at work. I think we're a lot older a species than we've been led to believe, and I think that, as the alchemist said, I'm a biocentrist. I believe that the human beings are one of the most important creatures in the universe. And we need to preserve our history. We need to create a destiny that's equitable. And we need to cut loose the shackles of the slave masters so that we can think for ourselves again, which we haven't really been allowed to do for a long time.
Let's go to Toronto. Steve, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George. My question was if the guest had any idea as to how this whole thing got started. Like, how did the Aryans, originally gain such a technological advantage over the rest of human beings?
Because they developed the technology to get off the planet before the coronal mass ejections. At the end of the Iron Age, every time we develop technologies, but they get destroyed by the coronal mass ejections. The Aryans changed the game and kept the technology and came back fully informed and didn't have to make any advances because they were already completely advanced. And they came back with all the technology from the previous age intact you know, waited it out on Mars, and then they came back, and then when the time clock went off, when the buzzer went off 6,000 years ago, and they realized they had to start getting moving again because the coronal mass ejections were coming, then they pulled out their technology, began giving it to us, and we began developing it, and that's how it happens. And their plan is to come back again at some time in the future with all their technology after they believe that we will be reduced back to a hunter-gatherer status.
Let's take a call from Vashon Island in Washington. Go ahead, Dexter.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Okay.
Okay, I got a question about the Norway spiral and the it's called Project Blue Beam.
Oh, right. Sure.
And it's come to my attention that it happens, that kind of stuff is only happening in Russia, and the Norway spiral thing happened that very same day, though. I don't know if very many people know about this, but I wanted to know if you did, Jay, was that pyramid that was floating over the Kremlin for, like, the good part of the afternoon?
Yep,
that was weird. Jay, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're connected. It's the Aryans giving everybody a warning, a heads up that this is it and don't mess with us. And we're leaving and don't mess with us. That's what it's about. And we're in charge and you can't do anything about it. Of course, I completely disagree with that.
Project Bluebeam, of course, supposed to be a false flag of some kind of hologram that would be set up to make us think that there's a UFO invasion. Right?
Exactly, of which will not happen. And they're not going to disclose aliens. Don't count on it. None of that's going to happen. The bottle is tightened up, and the lid will never come off.
You got it. Thank you, Jay, for being on the program. Jay's website,
thank you, George.
Linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Now he's got two, jwidener.com, WEIDNER, and sacredmysteries.com as well. Fascinating guest. Thank you so much, Jay, for being on the program. Next program, we talk with John Searle about the John Searle story. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Shadalon DeSueur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.